Hello and welcome back to another episode of Farewell. I'm your host, Clay Skipper. Today we are talking about nerves. Nerves are something that I would imagine almost all of us experience, whether that's before a big race or maybe even a small race or a presentation at work, a speech. Could be anything really. A job interview, an important discussion. All these things create pressure. And though it's totally normal to experience nervousness and to have a reaction to pressure, because that's your body having a biological response to some sort of performance that you care about, it can be destabilizing because it can be scary and you can get caught in a spiral or loop in such a way that it can negatively affect your performance. So today I had Steve talk to me about how to best handle nerves and pressure. As an elite athlete himself for many years, and as someone who has coached elite athletes at all levels, he has a lot of experience in how to navigate high pressure situations and has put in the time to figure out what works best to, as he says, a phrase he uses that I like, turn down the alarm. So that is today's coach up. Here is Steve Magnus on how to handle pressure.
So this is tough. But what I'll say there, and what I'll say here, is that no tool works all the time. So your best bet is to develop as many tools as you can so that when the pressure situation occurs, you just kind of cycle through them. So I'm just going to scattershot some tools. I think one of the most important ones is what I just call like get to the starting line. Because in racing, like, it all sucks. The pressure, the stress is all there. But then once the gun goes off, generally, to a large degree, the stress kind of dissipates. Like, there's still a little bit there, but it dissipates. Why? Because you're executing on your action. You're like, oh, I have to forget about the like stress and pressure and focus on the task at hand. I've got to be focused. So a lot of it is like, do whatever you can to get to the gun going off. Other strategies that work really well are zooming out. So what do I mean by that? Is stress tends to narrow us. So it tends to convince us that the thing in front of us causing stress is life or death, right? That how we do in this race, like, is the end of our world. If we mess up in this presentation or podcast or whatever is giving us nerves, like, that means our job is over, we're fired. That's how our brain kind of interprets it. Because, you know, out on the savannah, you know, centuries ago, what happens, well, stress was designed to see a lion, tiger, or snake and like focus us on that thing so that we could figure out how to survive that potential danger, right? So the same thing occurs here, except we don't have a lion to focus on. We've got, you know, a weekend 5K that's causing us that stress. But that's exactly what we need to do, which is zoom out. So what do? We put things in perspective. You know, we say, you know, who cares how I do in this weekend 5K? Like, who's going to look up the results? Like, my mom, my dad, like, are they going to hate me if I lose this race? Of course not. Like, anybody who cares is going to still love me. Like, they're going to still value me, even if I get dead last by hours, right? And I think putting that into perspective is really helpful. Another one is to, again, zoom out temporally. So to think, okay, this feels really stressful now. Will I even remember it a month from now, a year from now, 5 years from now? Like, in the grand scheme of things, like, how much does this matter? Other things that tend to work are what I'd call like physiological disruptors. So here, things like, you know, changing your breathing, doing box breathing, slowing your breathing down. Why does that matter? Because your brain kind of picks up cues for how stressed you are based on internal and external feedback. One of the feedback mechanisms it gets is if you're doing the equivalent of a dog panting, right? If your breathing is going pretty quickly, your brain goes, okay, like, we're breathing heavy. We must be stressed, right? So what do? You switch that. You slow the breathing down. It's another physiological trick is is dunking your head in cold water or splashing your face with cold water. Why? Because we have this reflex called a diving reflex, where when you hit cold water, your brain goes like essentially like, oh, relax, slow down, conserve, because like we splashed into cold water and that, I guess, might make us die. So like relax. So if you splash your face with cold water, it kind of convinces you to relax for a second. So again, physiological tricks to kind of just slow things down to get you out of that fight or flight, that stress mode. And, you know, the last thing I'll say on perception of stress, and there's some research behind this too, is often how we interpret the stress or pressure impacts, you know, its effects. So if I sit here, Clay, and I say, oh my God, I'm so nervous to talk to Clay on this podcast today. What's going to happen? I'm going to mess up. Like, I'm going to be staring at Clay's face and just forget what to say. If I interpret it negatively, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because my brain goes, oh, his thoughts are negative, his feelings are negative. Like, this is going to be a disaster. If I interpret those same sensations and say, hey, that little bit of nerves I'm feeling, like, what is that? That's just my body preparing for action, because it realizes that, you know, I can't be asleep when I'm talking to Clay, right? I need some energy when I'm on the starting line. My muscles need to be ready to fire and work. So of course I'm going to be a little bit nervous, a little bit filled with adrenaline, a little bit twitchy. That's just my body kind of preparing for action. So instead of seeing that anxiety as negative, seeing it as like, hey, this is just the excitement state getting me ready to perform. Again, it's not a cure-all, but it can help you take on the thing that you're facing.
Yeah, I love that. I once heard somebody say nervousness is just excitement without breath, which is exactly what you're saying. It's an excited state where you forget to breathe, you're dog panting, and so you get nervous. And the other thing I heard that I loved is from, I may have said this on the podcast before, but it's from an interview between Ezra Klein, New York Times columnist, and all the time, I think he was at Vox, and Lisa Feldman Barrett, who's a psychologist. And she was saying how she had heard, I don't know if it was her kid, but she had heard a karate teacher tell his students one time before a performance, I don't know what you call a karate performance, but to get their butterflies flying in formation. And I love that idea, right? Because like we all know the sensation of having butterflies, and exactly what you're saying is like, instead of just letting them, you know, create chaos inside, be like, all right, we're going to harness this excited energy to marshal it towards helping us with our performance.
Yeah, I love that. And I think like, again, the point of that is like we're reconceptualizing it so that it takes a little of the edge off, right?
Yeah.
And it allows us to, what do all these things do? It allows us to get to the point where we're doing action. Yeah. And I think generally when we're taking an action, you know, if we're running a race, we've prepared, right? If not, you know, good luck to you. If we're giving a presentation, chances are we've prepared, unless, you know, maybe you're a high school student who slacked off, but generally you're prepared. So we just need to get to that preparation state. And, you know, one of my tricks whenever I give big talks is the first slide, I know like the back of my hand, like I know it so well. I know the story I'm going to tell. Just like in the mile, I know the first 200, like this isn't a surprise. Like, I know how I'm going to get out, or in the marathon, like I know the first mile and what I'm trying to hit and how to hit it. Right. And if you can just get started, it just kind of dissipates and gets you in that zone of like, okay, I've been here before. I've been here before. We're going to be okay. One more thing that comes to mind. If you look at warm-ups matter for athletes, absolutely getting the body ready. But I am convinced that a large part of an athlete warming up. So if you go watch a track athlete warm up, they go through, you know, their jogging, their dynamic stretching, their drills, their strides, they're fiddling around doing stuff. A large part of that is filling the gap because you're like, okay, I'm not going to sit here and think about the race I have to run in 10 minutes. I'm going to do these butt kicks and skips and blah, blah, blah. And what does that do? It gives you something to focus on to kill the time before the gun goes off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. That makes a lot of sense. To your point, you said I've been here before. I can do this. Is there an argument for like the best thing to avoid a future freak out is to actually have a massive freak out one time and see that it doesn't kill you? Maybe you don't calm your nerves. It's like I'm thinking of like a comedian who bombs, right? Like after you bomb, it's sort of like, oh, that was horrific, but I'm still standing and I'm okay.
This
Exposure
is why
therapy.
comedians often, where do they try and bomb? At their local comedy club. They don't do it on the HBO special, right? Why? Because they've spent time at the local comedy club, like refining the jokes and keeping the ones that work. I think there's absolutely a trick to that. And what I would tell people is try to have your bombs at a low or moderate stake, competition. And I would sometimes do this as a coach. You get that athlete who is so afraid that they like hold back instead of risk it. So what would you do? I tell athletes, and I did this many times, I'd say, you know what? At this local track meet, the first half of this mile, I just want you to go with the leader. And in your head, you're like, you're gonna blow up. Like you're not gonna hold it, like because the leader's pretty good in this one. But why do you tell them that? So A, they get used to like going for it. And B, they see that no one cares that you blew up. In fact, most people are going to come up to them and be like, hey, like I saw you at halfway, like sticking with the leader. Way to stick your head in it. Next time you'll be able to like stay the whole time. And it does exactly that. It like reframes things from seeing, messing up or losing or failing or what have you. As this big giant, thing to avoid, and sees it as like, oh, the world didn't end. Like, I'm all right.
Yeah, that's I like that. It's smart coaching on your part. There you go. Effective coaching.
Every once in a while, I have something. I gotta stick this in for this one. Last one. This just came to mind. And I think I borrowed this from like some baseball coach from literally like the 1940s or 50s is what I remember. But I remember we had this conference championship. And we had a young lady who was like this. She was a little banged up, was healthy enough to run, but wasn't like confident because like she had to miss some workouts and was like super nervous. I think it was her senior year, last conference championships, and like the team was counting on her to score and blah, blah, blah. And she was just freaking out. And she also was like a very religious person. And knowing this, like I go up to her and I say, do you believe in Jesus? And she says, yes, you know this. I said, have you ever physically and visibly seen Jesus? And she goes, well, no. I said, do you have any like concrete scientific proof that like Jesus like bl and just went down this list? And she's like, no. And I'm like, well, why do you believe in Jesus? She's like, I mean, I have faith based on, the Bible and my teachings and my upbringing. And I'm like, great. Have you seen yourself run fast? Yes. Have you seen yourself like succeed in workouts? Yes. Have you seen, yourself come through, nerves and anxiety and perform at the best? And she's like, yes. I'm like, well, why in the world don't you have faith in something that you literally see? And, it got to the point she did pretty well. She made the final and did well there. And again, would I use that with everybody? Nope. But like if you know the athlete in front of you, like you're trying to get them out of their head and change their perspective to understand that like yes, this is a difficult task, but at the end of the day, like I need to have some faith in myself because like there's reason to have faith in myself. And again, sometimes you got to pull out the crazy shit to, get them out of the spiraling headspace.
That's so good. That's some Jedi mind shit. Also speaks to like individualized coaching, right? Like knowing that she would respond to that. That's amazing. That is a great story. One final question I have for you is having been an elite athlete. Hope you're not offended by that. Still an elite in some ways, but you know, and someone who has worked with really elite athletes, and including Olympians, do they? I'm asking you to massively generalize here, but I, as a, someone who's never had that sort of elite athleticism, I'm curious if those people have, if they feel the pressure less, or they're just better at handling it.
I would say 95 to 99% have the same experience that you have. Which means they feel the pressure, they feel the expectations. Like sometimes it's overwhelming, but they've got so many reps that they have a lot of tools to figure out how to navigate it. Now, there are exceptions, but even if we look at the exceptions, and I think I talked about this in Do Hard Things, you look at Alex Honnold, who's like amygdala doesn't react to anything, like scientifically, like he's his amygdala emotional response center, like doesn't react to the thing that you and I react to. But if you watch, you know, the documentary on him, what does he do the first time he tries to scale El Cap? He calls it. Like he comes back down the mountain after going up for an hour or two. And I forget exactly what he says, but it's essentially like, nope, not today. Like today's not the day. And it, and then they regroup and they do it again and he's successful.
Spoiler alert, like, Steve.
Yeah, sorry. Spoiler alert. If you haven't watched that and you're listening to this podcast, what are you doing, man? Yeah, yeah. What are you doing? It was in the documentary, you know, draft. Like, yes. Get on it. So, but the reason I say that is like, even the best of the best feel some sort of stress or nerves or, you know, going into things. And my job as a coach, even with the athletes, like the best athletes, some have freaked out just as bad as like the JV high school kid who, you know, doesn't have many reps. Like it happens. Why? Because we're human. And again, I'm going to go back, put my non-evolutionary psychology expertise on here. So sorry for extending if I get this totally wrong, but why do we all experience that? Because it's better to assume that the ruffling of the grass is a snake or a tiger than to say, ah, nah, that's not a big deal. And then it ends up being a snake or tiger. So our alarm systems are trigger happy to keep us alive. And because they're trigger happy, we freak out over running a weekend 5K and treating it like it's the biggest thing ever. And guess what? We do the same thing, or the best of the best do the same thing when they're getting into the Olympic Games or what have you. They've just got more reps on how to handle it, I think.
All righty. We went a little long on that one today. We try to keep these below 15 minutes, but you know, sometimes Steve gets talking and he's got a lot of great tips, a couple great stories, and feels worth it to go a little bit long. So a few quick thoughts on what Steve said to just close us out. First of all, I like his idea of using tools just to get to the starting line of whatever it is that we're nervous about, whether that's an actual starting line for a race or the metaphorical starting line of something else. Nerves can be overwhelming, and it's easy to feel like in that moment when they are overwhelming that maybe they're going to last forever, even if we know intellectually they're not going to. Emotionally, it can feel like they might. And just having in the back of your mind this idea of, if I can get to the starting line and get into the actual action of the performance, they'll usually dissipate. I think that will be helpful for me going forward. So that's something I'm keeping in mind. I like Steve's idea of really dialing in the prep of the first part of the performance, whether that's the first slide of a presentation or it's the first 400 of a mile. I have a friend who works in live TV, and she's always said that when they kick it to her, if she has her first line down really well by the time they cut the camera to her, the rest will flow naturally after that. So it's just having that first line or two really down and then trusting that your preparation will kick in after that. And it usually does. And then lastly, Steve saying that elite athletes experience the same stress and nerves that more pedestrian or civilian athletes like myself, maybe like you, also experience. And that the only difference is they have a lot more reps. And I like that because Nerves can obviously be uncomfortable, but if the next time you experience nerves, you can keep in the back of your mind, oh, this is one more opportunity to practice. This is one more opportunity to get in a rep working with nerves. That reframes it in a way that might allow you to work with those nerves rather than have them sabotage you. So that's all for today. Thank you to Steve Magnus. I thought there was a lot of great stuff in there. So thank you to him. Thanks to you for listening. We will be back on Thursday with another episode. Appreciate you rating the show, subscribing to the show, and most importantly, as I always say, sharing the show with friends if you like it. We will talk to you later in the week. And as always, farewell.